There's been a crapalanche. I think.
Shit. Well, there's the start of our episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to
a very angry episode.
The angry episode of the Carmudgeon. Unusually curmudgeonly episode.
We have something to be mad about.
Yes.
There is a scandal brewing in the automotive world in the United States.
It's on the level. Dieselgate of the 2020s.
Lighting gate. Have you noticed all of the, to use a fair word, assholes driving with no lights on? Mm-hmm. Have you noticed?
Or all of the assholes driving with all of their lights on, including their high beams?
Or even worse, the people just doing what they should, not assholiestnessly, driving around in their cars, but their headlights are so fucking blinding that you hit a pole and kill a family of
geese.
Hang on, I was thinking ants that were calling up the pole or something. Anyway, we're going to talk about automotive lighting and how we are currently suffering from an epidemic of
bad regulation and bad design.
And you need to go and write to your congressman or I don't know.
They're too busy. The congressperson's definitely too busy embezzling funds or variously, you know, incestuously.
Anyway, stay tuned for this podcast. It's actually a fun one.
A fun one. Yes.
As opposed to normally where they're just meh. That is a Derek Tam hyphen Scott. I'm a Jason Camisa.
Jason Camisa. This is the Carmudgeon Show. It is part of the Haggerty Podcast Network.
And if you like this kind of stuff, you might consider joining the Haggerty Drivers Club, which allows you to be part of a movement to protect driving. And that might include the ability to turn your fucking headlights on or off at will and drive or whatever. And it includes a
subscription to our award-winning magazine, 24/7 unlimited roadside towing assistance
with flatbed.
Magazine.
Access to our evaluation tools and very more. There's a link below. Check it out. Bye.
Are we doing an episode right now? What is it about? What is this topic?
I'm going to spend the next hour screaming at the top of my lungs.
Okay.
You don't see
earplugs.
Okay. I want you to put yourself in a car. And,
mentally,
pretend you're behind the wheel of a car. Do you feel that? Yeah, great. However, whatever it takes, method actor. Do you feel the anger boiling?
Yes.
The frustration?
Immensely.
Is it because of that fucking Subaru blocking the left lane?
Yes, it is. Well, they're dead now, so they're not blocking anymore in my imagination.
Okay.
Because I have punted them off into the median.
Subarus are pretty good crashes. So I just got accused of hating Subarus for obvious reasons.
Weird.
But I don't.
Could it have been the relentless rage that you expressed at everything related to Subarus?
It's not the cars. This is the thing.
It's a CVT one.
Well, okay. So there was that. There was a whole bunch of feedback on the, pushback on the last episode or a couple episodes ago when I was bitching about Subaru drivers. And somebody said, oh, Jason should do an episode on Spike Ferristein's podcast because Spike loves Subarus and Jason hates Subarus. And I'm like, I don't think I responded, but I was like, no, it's not the cars. It's the fucking brain dead Northern California people who buy them and then sit in the goddamn left lane. And then there was another one where, like, Jason has some harsh words to say about the CVT and the WRX. And there were a lot of people in, like, WRX forums who were very butthurt at our discussion on how many people. I'm sick, which means we just recorded an Icons episode because that's what happened.
What was it about?
The Icons episode?
Mm-hmm. You look very uncomfortable.
Did we tell them?
I don't know.
You were there. You know,
I was, yeah.
Don't pretend you don't know.
I have no idea what you're talking about. This never happened. Gesundheit.
We did the PX episode.
Uh-huh.
Finally. But I think...
But it's not a podcast.
Not a podcast. No.
Yet.
This has always been the problem with the PX episode, was that it was too big in scale for this podcast. Mm-hmm. And it was born here. The idea was born here. So I think our audience deserves to hear an episode on it, but I'd like for them to not be so far apart that,
right?
You know, it's like PX, and then a month later, the PX Icons comes out. So we'll talk about that later. But I apologize for my coughing, but seriously, 4 out of 5 of us on the crew were sick. And this just happens every time we do. So far, only one hospital visit. So yeah, we went on this rant about whatever. The Subaru WRX owners were quite upset with me because I said, you know, you have one reason you'd ever buy a WRX with a CVT, and that's because you lost your limb and you no longer have a left leg, and people are upset about that. Sure, fine, so it's whatever.
Do they like the CVT? They like it.
They must like their CVTs.
Well, if they wouldn't have gone to raise arms.
I just, look, it doesn't matter. I'm not judging. Yes, I am. I would like to pretend that I'm not judging you for driving an automatic performance car, but if you're driving an automatic performance car, you've missed the purpose.
Well, some of them are good, right? I mean, if you're driving a Porsche PDK.
Tell me you don't judge someone who drives a 911 Turbo S PDK cab.
Oh, I absolutely judge those people.
Right? Do you
I just say I'm happy for you. Good luck with that.
That's just you being Californian. Oh, I'm like super happy for you and the choices and the journey that you've embarked on. And I think that's a wonderful journey for you. And then you turn around and you're like, what a fucking asshole. And I'm a New Yorker and I'm like, you fucked up. You're stupid. Why do you have a turbo ass cab when you should have a GT3? Oh, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. Right. Well, that's the point. And a non-car person shouldn't be buying a fucking Porsche. And a non-car person shouldn't be driving a fucking CVT. I'm not going down this route again. WRX. Anyway, so I want you to, the whole point of this was to channel your anger at the Subaru drivers and the 911 Turbo S cab owners with PDK. And then almost hit a car that has not one fucking light on the exterior
is it nighttime
of
now?
The car, because it's nighttime.
Yes, okay.
Because you were also blinded by some other fucking car whose low beams are so fucking high, you're convinced they're not just high beams, but low somehow beams. He's channeled the fucking force of the sun in 1 2-square-inch space to broadcast all of that energy directly at your fucking eyes. To which I say, what the fuck is going on with automotive lighting?
Okay. And that's our subject. Okay.
I'm not mad.
No, you're just passionate.
You know, no, I'm fucking mad. We pay these government asshole motherfuckers, and I'm talking to you, NHTSA, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, to enact rules and standards to protect us. And they have ignored lighting improvements in lighting for years and years and years and years.
That sounds scary. It could be possibly hazardous. We can't allow laser headlights.
We can't allow anything that the rest of the world is doing, even though it's tested and vetted.
And we certainly shouldn't mandate amber indicators in the back.
Why
would you do that?
Well, that could possibly cost up to 12 cents per car, Derek Tam hyphen Scott. Why would we save the lives of people from huge, horrible rear-end impacts over 12 cents a car? Oh, but we'll mandate the CHIMSL, the center high-mounted stoplight, which has proven ultimately to have zero effect on accidents in the real world, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. That's how annoying is that?
Like, that's difficult for me to come to terms with. I feel like it makes a difference when I'm in the real world.
I would agree.
Like when I'm interacting with an old car and you're not sure, like everything's very dim and you're not sure whether those are brake lights or not, having the CHIMSL.
Yeah, I agree. Or they hit the turn signal and the brake at the same time, and it's a single bulb for on either side. And so you have all of a sudden one light goes on, or both go on, and a split second later one turns off. What the fuck does that mean? Did the brake just give out?
Or is brake it light flashing?
Or is it flashing? Yeah. There's a lot of ambiguity that goes away when you have a CHIMSL. But ultimately, it has not resulted in a reduction in rear-end collisions. But what has been measured and is demonstrably safer is amber turn signals, but they don't mandate that. What they did mandate is lights that don't work. So I think my question to you is, at what point does something go from a problem to a gate?
Define gate.
I think we're having lighting gate.
As in the hotel water gate.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we're having lighting gate. I'm going to show you a picture.
But this gate implies like scandal and wrongdoing. And is this the kind of intrigue we're expecting in this episode?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a reason why. So there's no reason why cars are driving around with no lights on. That's just bad engineering and stupidity. We'll talk about that next. But the reason why everything is so bright and all these cars are so bright in your face is exactly the same sort of corporate malfeasance that caused Dieselgate or saddle gas tank gate or whatever. It's companies complying to the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law. So
You think Dieselgate was the result of complying with the letter of the law?
Yeah. When the car was on a test stand, it could only emit X and Y. It complied with
the letter of the law. Say that it has to comply with it on the test stand, or it's the way that the law is enforced that it's actually...
The law's written that on a test stand, under these circumstances, it has to do this, and that's exactly what it did.
Then why was there was a corporate penalty in the billions of dollars?
So the reason Volkswagen got in so much trouble on this whole thing was not just because they cheated. Mm-hmm. By the way, so did everyone else, yes. Right? Cummins that just paid another $2 billion for the same
shit? Yeah, and Cummins had done the same thing, I think, in the 90s as well. They got a big penalty, and, you know, Kia had a big one shortly before.
It's happened over and over and over again. There was a clarification made by the CARB, California Air Resources Board, that said the test cycle is how we test it, however the law is such. But the reason Volkswagen got nailed to the cross was because they covered it up.
Transparent. Yes. They spent like a year being like, no, everything's fine. It's a technical problem. We don't have a defeat device. And then
they did a bullshit. Don't forget the bullshit recall that didn't do a thing. Yes.
The first one. Because they did the two recalls. Yeah.
Second one counted.
No, they did another one before the Dieselgate, right before Dieselgate broke in September of 2015.
On which cars? The first gen cars or the second?
The first gen cars. Really? Yeah.
Christ. I did all that reading for the Piek episode because my question was really, did Ferdinand Piek actually know what was going on? We'll cover that later. But here's the thing for the lighting. I'm going to show you a picture. And by you, I mean the audience. I'm going to show you guys a picture. And this is just one that I found on the internet. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see a bunch of little arrows and a dark spot on a headlight.
Yes, I have seen the picture.
What do you think that means?
I bet that is the location where they measure brightness or something like that. And it has to be at a certain level at that exact spot. And then, of course, there's much more lighting that exceeds that area. But that's the point of measurement.
Yes, that is correct. So the way U.S. lighting regulations work is that there are several points that light is measured. You can have maximum output in those points. That dark spot on that one car is above the cutoff, and where they measure sort of light scatter above the cutoff is just in that one point. Mm-hmm. And so with complex arrays of LEDs and of optics, car companies realize they can now engineer in a dark spot where it's being measured, but the rest of the field is vastly over illuminated. And I've had now two different car companies, engineers, when I played stupid and say, what's the dark spot? Because it is very noticeable on some of these cars. They're sort of moving around and you know, as you're driving around, you see the dark spots on the road. Like, what is this? And their lighting engineers are all fucking proud of themselves. That's where they measure the fucking thing. And I'm like, you assholes, you're the reason that every fucking new car is blinding the shit out of everyone.
Well, are you surprised?
Lighting gate, headlight gate, headlight gate. We need to come up with a name for this. I am not.
Okay, so what's the benefit for them? Why is brighter headlights good? Why do they bother to do it at all?
Because it's an arms race, right? Well, there's a bunch of issues. It's an arms race, right? I get into my, what's a car with great headlights? Lucid. I get into my Lucid Air and I have great lighting in every direction. Oh, look at my headlights are great.
Uh-huh. So people like it. It's consumers. Yeah. They're doing it because consumers want bright lights.
Yeah. The other thing I think wouldn't surprise me to know that car companies are doing it to piss off the federal government, knowing that the test is flawed in an effort to get them to try to change the fucking test. Because the bigger issue is that the U.S. government has forbidden to allow adaptive matrix lights for years now. Mm-hmm. And they signed, so adaptive matrix, so for background on this, the U.S. lighting laws came in quite early. Cadillac, I think it was, invented the dipped beam. Which was a physical.
Oh, Autronic Eye. This is the automatically dipping?
No. This is 1913.
Early.
The idea that you could have a low beam and a high beam.
Yes.
Okay. And the dipped beam was for when, you know, you didn't want to blind the shit out of everyone with your candle or whatever was on the front of your 1913 Cadillac, which sort of became codified into vehicle code. You have to have a low beam and a high beam. There's your two discrete lighting modes that are allowed to have X amount of lighting. And so the U.S. government said, I think for a while there, our maximum lighting on low beam was 1/3 of what Europe was. So Europe developed an H1, which was the first halogen lighting bulb, and then an H4, which was a low and high beam together.
In the same bulb.
And so in the 1960s, Europe took a huge leap ahead of us with these halogen bulbs, where our lighting regulations required a sealed beam. And so mm-hmm. the sealed beam was originally a non-halogen 7-inch round standardized headlight that was the only option that car companies had, period. That was it.
Yeah. And so this is widely styled into the front of many different cars, you know, the little Porsche 356 or Mercedes 300 SL for the US market, or, you know, Alfa Romeo or Jaguar E-Type, or
they were interchangeable. And
I think you could buy it at any automotive parts store. You buy a 7-inch round headlight that had actually both low and high beams in it.
Exactly. And that, I mean, that was a great intention to say, okay, consumers should be able to just replace a light. It's a safety issue and it's a great thing. But sealed beams put out shit light. And this
because they're cheap, because the whole headlight is replaceable, not just the bulb inside. And so it's like, I don't know, what is a sealed beam 7-inch shit one cost? $40, $30?
Oh, I don't think so. It wouldn't surprise me if they were six. They're cheap. They're really cheap.
Yeah.
There's nothing to it. Yeah. In the I think it was late 60s or early 70s, don't quote me on these years, NHTSA allowed a change to go to halogen filled sealed beams. And then at some point also allowed square.
Yeah, the square ones probably came out. I mean, before that, they were single 7-inch. Then they went to a pair of 5 1/4 inch in 1957 or 58. I think it was standardized. And that's why all you can tell if you're looking at an old American car and it's like a 50s tail fin car and it has four headlights, you're like, it's a 58 or later. That appeared, except for on the Eldorado Brougham, which appeared in 57. So yes, you could go out to, they introduced the 5 1/4 or the 7-inch, and you could use mix and match them. And so that's why like a BMW E28 has 7-inch outers and 5 1/4 inch inners, right. But those dimensions are not accidental. And then rectangular ones arrived probably in the 1970s or late 60s. Mm-hmm. But they're all, you know, the same basic headlights. And this changes in 1986, 85. Right.
And they dated back to in the 40s. So, mm-hmm. I mean, so think about it this way. You're in 1992 and you're in a car, you're driving a car
with Range Rover 50 Classic.
Year old headlight.
Yeah, for example, technology. Has 7-inch.
Yeah. So of course, the first thing we all did with our 80s cars, and we still do, is throw out the sealed beams and upgrade to US.
Put the E-code European headlights.
I keep meaning, bulbs. So the Ferrari, the 308 that I own and used to own, has 4 US spec non-halogen sealed beams. Mm-hmm. And the light, you can't even tell if the headlights are on. And Holley makes a product called Retro Bright, which mm-hmm. I'm really psyched to try. And I reached out to them a year ago and they were like super enthused to get back to me.
I've driven a Range Rover Classic with that mm-hmm. lighting upgrade. It's an LED light that has the color temperature of an old headlight, but mm-hmm. not the brightness,
right.
Which is something I've been meaning to do to the Miura because it has awful headlights.
Anyone from Holley, if you're listening,
Retrofit Source stuff carries like
them.
This too?
Yeah, they carry the Holley line.
Got it.
And the Holley line, you can do a normal color temperature. You can do, I think you
I
can
would do the warm halogen looking one for an old car.
Well, they had two, if I remember correctly. They have 3 temperatures total. So you have like a 2200 Kelvin, which is a non halogen color temperature.
Yeah.
Then you have a later halogen color temperature, which is probably more like, I don't know, 28, and then you have something like a 3500. I don't remember the color temperatures, but I remember thinking, wow, if I could have the correct look for all these old sealed beam cars, Holley should be sponsoring this episode.
The Range Rover Classic that I drove for the BTS had that, and that to me is the best of both worlds because it had the right temperature. I didn't drive it much at night, but it was definitely improved over the 7-inch sealed beam Wagners that were originally fitted to those cars.
Can't be much worse. I mean, okay. And so then you were talking about 1986.
Yeah. 1986, big change occurs, which is they're still shit sealed beams, I guess, but they are allowing different shapes and form factors.
They're not sealed beams anymore.
They're not. Oh, they're replaceable.
This was a genius move. So 86 is when replaceable bulb headlight housings became legal in the US.
Right. So this is where you get aero front ends on the Taurus, for example, mm-hmm. or Mercedes-Benz goes from the recessed rectangular setup that you'd seen on a 126, for example,
to semi-recessed
or a 190E to the mm-hmm. semi-recessed thing that still is optically shit.
But lighting-wise, far better. Do you know who did this? I love this.
Is it American company?
Yes.
Is it for the Taurus?
It was not for the Taurus, actually. Although 86 Taurus.
Oh, Ford. It was a different Ford mm-hmm. product. Fox Body or Lincoln.
The Lincoln Mark, whatever it was, 6, 7, 8, 10, 42, whatever.
7, probably.
7. I was being silly. Mark something, Lincoln. Somebody at Ford very geniusly realized that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, the DOT, were all under the EPA in the way the government
structure works. So they said an aero will reduce fuel consumption if you have flush headlights.
The reason they were all called aero lights at the time, this guy, European aero lights, was because the car companies argued that they wouldn't be able to reach CAFE fuel economy regulations if they weren't allowed to put aero European style front ends. And so finally, we're talking, so this is, think about 40 years after seal beams came in, the government had no choice but to relent because Ford's argument was you are killing people. Not on the lighting thing.
No, air quality.
Right, they were totally happy to let people die in car accidents because you didn't see the deer that was, you know, running right in your path. But as soon as air quality became involved, they were able to say, well, you're actually harming the planet by not allowing these aero lights. And ta-da, 86 happened, which is pretty cool of Ford, right?
And a meaningful advancement.
Huge.
Aesthetically. And
but there's been another. So then eventually we got xenon lights. And xenon in the U.S. required load leveling, like
self-adjustable.
And the reason why is because below that cutoff, they have a very discrete cutoff. Yeah. Their xenons were more than twice as bright as conventional halogen bulbs. And so if you had a lot of stuff in the rear, the front end of the car would nudge up and you'd be blinding everyone.
This was true in Europe also, I think, right? You had to have mandatory headlight height adjustment.
Maybe it was. And headlight washers in most countries. Mm-hmm. Because once the exterior of the headlight was covered in like snow and ice and dirt, it would scatter so much light that it would be blinding. So that happened. And then LEDs happen. And so LEDs, you know, a typical LED consumes 35 watts or 30 watts in place of, or even less, 27. In place of the 55 and 60 watt halogens and put out 2 to 3 times more light. Plus, they're a much smaller light source. So you can make the headlight smaller. You can use more complicated lenses. There's so many benefits to doing this.
Since the arrival also of projector headlamps that occurred in the 1990s before xenons, but you would start to see this on like for I-550 Maranello or 512.
Or E30s.
Or E30. Trying to think E30s, of normal
cars for normal people.
Or E34 or the E38.
I'm trying to think what American cars were the first to have projectors.
You and I are not going to know the answer to this. Lincoln Mark 7. No, that's xenons. Lincoln Mark 8 got Mark 8, xenons in the late 90s.
And it also was the first to have, a neon rear taillight.
The full width Heckblende.
They didn't call that Heckblende in Detroit, Derek.
Call it? The full width rear light, something. There was probably some name like Vacuumatic or something that... they had some absurd marketing.
Vacuumatic? That's a Eureka built.
That was a 1930s fountain pen. But it was one of those silly American names where they come up with the aero this or this, you know, the torque flight or the turbo jet carburetor. This American marketing term for dumb basic things that cars
Twilight Sentinel.
Yes. Autronic Eye.
Autronic Eye. There's some where, God, Americans were the best at making up. The Germans just put a magic or a tronic on the end.
Or just numbers. Yeah, option code Mercedes
Magic Vision Control. What the fuck is that? Mercedes is magic something always.
Magic fingers, seat massaging.
Control. Yeah. Magic diddle control. Magic light. So the big advancement has been in the last 10 years, 15 years, has been adaptive matrix lights. And so these take advantage of the fact that LEDs as a light source are very small. Mm-hmm. And so you can have multiple elements. Mm-hmm. And the idea is rather than having one light source that projects and you are
shaping the beam with a bunch of reflectors and optical equipment.
Exactly. You can now have multiple sources that have a much more even distribution.
It's like an LED, like a gigantic LED jumbotron where you can...
Yeah. Like that TV. An LED.
Yeah, you can change what each pixel is doing. So you basically, it's a headlight array that has, 30 or 40 pixels in it, each of which is...
Way more now.
Is it more now?
Thousands.
I remember the early ones when there were very few, and you could actually see the shape of the pattern.
You can still...
Squares or circles or rectangles.
Yeah, you can start some Mercedes, and they'll start in the center with one dot, and they go in and out, and then they fade up. The big benefit there is if you arrange those lighting elements or if you If you put a DLP in front of them, which is basically a series of small mirrors that you can block out individual pixels effectively, you can now use a camera on the front of your car that is looking for oncoming traffic or pedestrians or signage that reflects too brightly. And you can dim just that one spot. Mm-hmm. And if you do it quickly enough, like the modern ones do, you can have a car coming towards you and they don't know that you're quote unquote high beams are on, because there is no such thing as low beam and high beam. Everything's up at full brightness, but they're not being blinded because the camera is tracking where they are.
Mm-hmm. And is sort of in real time attenuating yeah. certain areas of the light beam pattern.
Exactly. And in theory, they could flash yellow if you had a multicolor LED array. You could flash yellow where a pedestrian is and light that pedestrian up for you. There are so many benefits. They can project stuff on the ground. I mean, we've seen tons of experiments like that. Audi's always been at the forefront of exterior lighting for the last 20 years. And they're doing really cool stuff with, you know, when you start the car, they're projecting really cool images. But the idea is next generation of stuff with autonomous cars. If I'm a pedestrian standing in the street, I see a car coming to a stop, it will project a walkway in front of me. So like that's the car's way of communicating with you and saying, you know, where we can't look at the driver and have him go, oh, you go. Mm-hmm. The car is literally laying out a light carpet in front of me saying, no, I see you. I acknowledge you're there and I'm not going to run you over. You might want to watch for the idiot in the Subaru behind them.
CVT.
I think it's more of like a
CVT.
No, it's more of like an Altima thing. The idiot in the Altima is just going to go right over the double yellow around them and run you over anyway. Yes.
Well, now the Altima forum is going to go off on you.
No, there are no Altima forums.
I know. They're all busy out there violating traffic laws. Yes, exactly. They don't have time to be on the forums.
Oversteering on lane changes.
Despite being front wheel drive.
Exactly. Well, it's the violent, it's the liftoff.
It's the liftoff, snap oversteer.
But the adaptive matrix headlights have been illegal in the U.S. because U.S. legislation, lighting requirements require a discrete low and high beam mode. Mm-hmm. This whole BMW LED lighting thing was described to me by an engineer who works for BMW as a complete scam in the US. So these the BMW laser light, you see the logo on some of these things, you can't use it by law in the US. Mm-hmm. So some marketing shithead decided, we have to be the first to have laser lighting in the US. Well, that doesn't comply to this low versus high beam stuff. And so you can see under very there's one very small, narrow set of circumstances where those things will switch on. And when they do, you're like, holy shit. Like they really do
project. They cut a hole in the pavement with the laser beam. No,
right.
I'm just kidding.
But they're down. They're like something down, like they're pulse width modulated down to like 10% of its real output. It's fully handicapped. Mm-hmm. They don't actually work. So last year, NHTSA finally changed the rules to allow adaptive matrix headlights by just saying, no, you no longer have to have a discrete on-off.
For high and low.
For high and low.
Or main and dipped, as they call it in the UK.
Yes.
If you've ever seen the terminology, it's this UK. I guess their main means they're driving around in the countryside all the time and you use dipped in town. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you're using main. Yep. Of course, most of us who live in urban areas, it's the opposite. You only use your...
Yeah, you use dip, which is isn't that a term?
Tobacco for? That goes in your mouth cancer area.
Yep, that's the one. I find it so interesting that the National Highway Traffic, the DOT's reasoning for not allowing all of the new European lighting stuff has always been, we don't want to blind. This is why I get so angry. We don't want to blind.
Right, because people contravene it by just having engineering in a dark spot at the location. Well,
that's the great hypocrisy of it. Yeah. They have not allowed all of these tremendous, genuine safety advantages for fear that the lights might, quote, dazzle oncoming traffic.
Which is incidentally exactly what we have as people meet.
It's so much worse.
Yes.
Now you have all these car companies engineering one little dot and everyone else is getting fucking fried with
suntan.
Suntan oncoming. And then the Matrix cars, like I just saw one, and it was an Instagram post, side by side, US Audi, Euro Audi, doing the same thing. And the US Audi was like, this poor biker that was coming towards must have been like, I think he's dead now. He just burst into flames.
Not from having been hit by anyone, from not being seen, but
yeah,
because
exactly.
he was spontaneously combusted under the force of the
light illumination. Output of the headlight. Right. Meanwhile, the European one, he just goes dim. And like, it's unbelievable. And so this level of, I think that we have, I'm now coining the term, let's just call it headlight gate. Because somebody who's an actual journalist who has time to deal with this shit needs to go expose all of these car companies. This is exactly
contravening the spirit of the law by meeting the letter of the law.
It's exactly the same shit as Dieselgate. It's the same philosophy of I will comply with the letter of the law, but do whatever I want. And it's creating a huge safety hazard. To the point where Wall Street Journal, I just saw this last week. The reason I wanted to talk about this today was Wall Street Journal did a whole thing. No, it's not you. Because right. So many people are thinking it's, oh my God, it's age related.
Yeah, I'm getting old and
or it's just, macular degeneration. Yeah. I can't see.
And you're just like old people. His headlights are too bright.
Yeah. But the joke was that WSJ, I read the article really quickly where like young people were like, Mom, no, I can't see either. Like 18 year olds that are like hitting trees because you can't see a thing. Uh-huh. And then what do you do? It's an arms race, right? Do you then put even brighter lights on your car? Well, it doesn't really help when you're so blinded by oncoming traffic. Yeah.
And everyone should drive an old car. No, I'm just kidding. No one should drive an old car.
But then, and this is what really makes me like this, the level of hypocrisy of in the interest of protecting you. By the way, NHTSA's reaction to this whole not allowing this stuff is that they didn't have the funds to test the European way.
Yes.
A Stevie fucking Wonder could see the difference in lighting between these two systems, right? Mm-hmm. Who is blind. Let me not. I mean, that was a little bit indelicate, but a fucking blind person could see the difference. He could feel the heat on his face from a US light and then not on the Euro light. That's all you need. So it's clear as night or day that these systems are not actually hurting, that they're actually helping. But stupid government
people. It's the insistence on maintaining separate regulations. And to be fair, there is a long tradition of the United States sort of leading, but this is not one of those areas.
No.
As relates to like emissions controls and air quality and sort of US led the way, but certainly in this case, they are not doing that.
I think the reason why the US has led the way in so many places is mostly California, if I'm being honest.
Yes, that's true. I mean, this is one of the things that has the number of states that also adopt California regulations around emissions is, I don't know, it's probably between one and two dozen other states in the US that refer to California. They say, look, if it meets CARB standards, California Air Resources Board standards, then like that, we're just going to defer to California because they put all this effort into doing this. And this, we invented smog in LA.
Well, there's two. I love how they're saying, well, if they, in the American sort of other states are saying, well, if they invested so much effort in this, we're just going to tag along with them, which would be wonderful if our government did that about lighting.
Europe.
Right. Say, well, if they invested all this other stuff. But let me also be clear. I kind of fucking hate CARB, right? As a resident of California who has to smog my cars.
Yes.
You know, emissions checks are getting more and more difficult. It's a nightmare to own 1975 through now 96. So next year it changes. So if it's 1975 through 95, you still have to do a rolling road dyno emissions test every 2 years, plus anytime the car transfers title. Mm-hmm. It's a fucking nightmare. And unlike other states where they sort of relax the standards as the cars get older.
Yeah, so this changed in 2005, I think it was, maybe six. It used to be rolling 30 years in California. And so I, of course, bought a 1977 car in Europe in 2005. And I was like, great, it'll be California legal in 2 years. And then they fixed it at 1975. And then I was like, fuck. Yeah. So that car is not registered in California. But yes, and the other thing that happened was that I bought a car, it was a 1987, and it passed smog. And then 2 years later, it didn't pass smog. And I was like, what the hell? And I looked at I put the smog side by side, and the passing threshold had gone down. Yeah. They are literally forcing people to take cars off the road that meet the original standards that they had to meet when they were new, but no longer can meet them because they're pushing down the thresholds to just get people to take the cars off the road. Just like you get, you know, I save these. Like the dealer that I used to work at, there was we got a letter from the state of California that said, congratulations, you may be entitled, it's from the California Air Resources Board, you may be entitled to receive $1,200 for your car, and they mail it to you because you're the registered owner of it. And the dealer owned at that time a Ferrari Daytona. And, you know, the car's listed for $550,000. And they're like, we'll give you $1,200 for this Ferrari Daytona to scrap it and take it off the road for, what was it called? Cash for Clunkers or something like that?
I know, so, you know, I have a folder for all my cars. And I know in my Scirocco folder, there is a subfolder called California DMV Insult. And it's a scan of the letter that I got saying, and this is how stupid California's DMV is. It's registered as a historical vehicle. It's not just a 30-year-old Volkswagen on, you know, that's a clunker. It's registered.
Well, they send it to every car. The formula is any car, you know, X years old or older. So it doesn't matter what the car is.
Well, you know what it is? It's a waste of our fucking tax dollars for them to send that letter. It's for us to torture us to offer $1,200 for a fucking $500,000 Ferrari. It's so stupid. I just needed to point that out because I'm praising California Air Resources Board and I actually hate them.
Well, they are good at certain things and certainly improving air quality over the course of the last 60 years or whatever, since the Clean Air Act of 1966.
It's worked.
Yeah. I mean, the smog used to be a thing. I remember, you know, you would visually see it and you see that far less than you used to. So, I mean, obviously, it's funny also, I think we've had this conversation where you're following somebody driving an old carbureted car and you're just like, I'm going to die out here. And you just imagine sitting in bumper to bumper traffic in LA in 1966, like,
what the hell was that?
No wonder all these boomers are so unhinged mentally.
Like because, this.
Well, and they were just not breathing oxygen. They were breathing carbon monoxide. So, you know, there are benefits to car, but I also think that the way that old cars get used here is sort of in terms of road miles accumulated. I think that the model that most other municipalities use works better because obviously you have to go out of your way to drive around in a car from 1978, you know, like those people I think should be allowed to sunset emissions regulations and to have it be fixed at 1975 is, I think.
I would be fine with a mileage cap on it, for example. Yes, like other states will do that.
You said Pennsylvania has a mileage cap of whatever it is, 2,500 miles a year.
I think it's 5,000 miles a year that exempts you from emissions testing.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, on something, if California was actually conscious, it would be if you have historical plates on your car, which means you're not allowed to drive the car for daily transportation anyway, except quote occasionally is that what they call it. If you have historical vehicle
primarily
plates on your car,
primarily is the word. Vehicles used primarily for.
No, it's exclusively. And occasional.
Let's pull up a Reg 17A. That's the DMV.
If
form.
I remember correctly, you were allowed unlimited use to clubs, parades, car shows, gatherings, get togethers, mechanics. And all of the sort.
Reg 17A.
Occasional personal use.
Section
Not that I have any of my cars.
Historic vehicle and horseless carriage. Certify this place will be placed on a motor vehicle manufactured after 1922, which is at least 25 years old and is of historic interest. I also certify that I understand the vehicle which these plates are issued to may be driven in historical exhibition activities only.
Yes. Okay. So you're referring to a form. I'm referring to the actual law, which I'm not going to bother looking up. Everyone can look for itself, but it does the actual statute limits says you will use this car exclusively for, and then it lists out like cars, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And occasional personal use. What the fuck does that mean? I don't know. But if I average 900 miles a year.
As long as you don't drive by the same donut shop every day, I think you're okay.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Those cars should be exempted. That's a different story.
But mileage verification, I think, is a great way to do that.
Although, you know, then everyone's just going to disconnect their odometer. I mean, look, but to the point, all right, this is why people are no worse than companies and vice versa, because we're talking about companies that are not complying with the letter, the spirit of the law. The reason that I think we as a country have been able to make progress on emissions controls, right? And if you, let me go back to a second. If you don't live in California, I have a friend who bought his house in a house in Glendale, which is right a suburb of LA in 2001 or 2002. And he bought the house and he was all proud of himself. And he saved up for years, gets this house. And about a month later calls me and is like, I've sent you an AOL message or whatever it was. And he had sent me an email of a photo of his street. And at the end of his street was this enormous mountain. And he didn't know there was a mountain there. And it was, we're not talking that long ago. This is 20 years ago. He was like, oh my God. And he just was out taking pictures all day as a photographer of his cars and his street and his house with this mountain right there and whatever. And next day, gone. And it would be like every 4 or 5 weeks for a day when the wind would go a certain direction, he would be able to see this mountain. And I would always get a picture of him via AOL or whatever it was. Now, and with it 10, but from in a period of 10 or 15 years, it went from seeing that mountain one day a month ish to not seeing that mountain one day every 6 months.
Yeah.
It's that air quality big of a difference, right?
Right. It's massive.
So you gotta give credit where it's due for CARB, but CARB, and which is the one that is pushed through all of these nationwide emissions regulations, doesn't have any ability to regulate lighting.
Mm-hmm. And I think, right. It's Air Resources Board.
Right. And I think the reason that we've seen the U.S. leading in emissions
is because of California, not because of the United States federal government.
And U.S. crash has nothing to do with the DOT, right? U.S. leading in crash really was insurance. A bunch of stuff from the 1960s, but then now the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, which is doing these narrow offset crashes and all these other great crash tests that separate all, you know, everything gets a 5-star rating on the DOT stuff. And IIHS says, oh, really? Watch this. Mm-hmm. You know, 2 5-star cars crash together. One, everyone dies. And the other one, everyone laughs. Very different situation. But in all of this lack of ability to trust Europe, because, you know, we don't have the resources to test those European things, and we're just not going to trust them. They've created the situation where they're actually creating grave danger, and then simultaneously allowed cars to drive with no fucking lights on at all.
Yeah, what we see is a mismatch between technology and regulations. This is a classic situation where you have that mismatch, because when they envision the laws, they write them around. There is no way to make a dark spot in a headlight, and you're using a single incandescent light bulb. And so the regulation predates technology. You would see this around, like when you used to be able to fly drones near airports, and now you can't. You know, they invent a regulation when the technology forces some kind of new regulation.
In the same way that you didn't used to have to specify that a car will emit X amount on a dyno versus in the real world, because, you know, a carbureted car and even early fuel injected car would have no way of knowing.
Correct.
Or a manual, in a lot of ways, will have no way of knowing whether it's
being evaluated
on a dyno.
Or watched.
But I want to talk about this no light situation.
Oh my God. Just absolutely asinine. But the reason why it happens is because I think it's the lighting cluster, the cluster inside of the car. It's always well illuminated.
If you are driving a car from the 1980s or 70s and your headlights aren't on, and
you can't see the gauges,
you're fucking drunk.
Yes.
Like, first of all, how do you get your lighter and your ashtray don't light up unless the headlights are on? So if you're drunk, the first thing you do, and I've never in my life been drunk, I don't drink. So, but I'm sure, judging from all of my friends, you get in your car, you stumble out of the bar, you start it, which is, you know, usually a couple pumps, and once it's idling, you reach down, you hit the lighter, you pull out your pack of Marlboros, and you light your cigarette. Well, if your fucking lights are on, you can't see the ashtray and you can't see your cigarette, so you weren't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Now, every car has electroluminescent backlit
dashboards. Which give you a suntan also, because
third degree burns.
Daytime mode. So full brightness. And so people are like being blinded inside of the car, so they don't think or know to turn on their headlights.
How many times have you seen a Nissan on the road?
Yes.
Then the only reason you've been able to see them is because you can see the fucking driver's eyes doing this while they're blinking, trying to figure out why they can't see a fucking thing, but they're lit up like a Vegas statue.
Yeah.
Yep. So I did a column on this at Road and Track years ago.
This is not happening in Canada.
No.
Isn't there some kind of regulation there that solves this in Canada?
Canada just passed a law two years ago, that prohibits any dash illumination if the headlights aren't on. And what they basically did was said, all cars have to have auto lights, period. And if you manually turn them off and you override, this is how you know anyone goes to fucking valet. Any asshole who parks their car to valet, the valets always switch them off and they drive around thinking their cars are still in auto mode, because the only way they know that they're not is by looking for a little green light that has a headlight logo. Otherwise, they're seeing vaguely things lit up front if they have DRLs. But
yeah,
not lit
or
from
if you're in an
rear.
Urban environment, then you get enough ambient lighting that it's like you can sort of feel your way around. But then you see something in the distance that's not lit up from the back, and you're just like, "What is this jackass?"
I've been on a tear about this for years. So I left Road and Track in 2015. So this has been going on now a decade. And one of my last columns, I think it was before I left, but because I continued as a columnist afterwards. But one of my columns was, I got into the car. No, I was still on staff. So it was a bunch of us were in the office. I was on a tear about this, bitching, and everyone was like, you're such a fucking nerd. And me, Sam Smith, Josh Condon, and it was one other person. John Crewson. So like the entire senior editorial staff, minus editor-in-chief, get into a car to go to dinner. And it was the winter.
It was a press car.
A Lexus ES. It was the first ES that was based on Avalon, not Camry. And we get in the car, I start it, we drive, we're all having fun and talking, whatever, and I point out, God, the headlights on this car suck. And
because they're off.
Sam is like, Jesus Christ, I flashed the high beams. They work. I'm like, you know, but we're driving this car's around. So, you know, I didn't put them on, which might have clued me in. Spoiler alert. But so I flash them. They're flying. I'm like, do you fucking believe? Man, these are, they're too low. Everything's got a long shadow. The color temperature's off. These suck. Every light is on the dash. And by the way, dimmed. So it's not just the cluster that's lit up and like Nissan style bright in my face or Kia style bright in my face. Everything is illuminated properly. It's all dim. The center stack is all illuminated. Everything is lit up properly. And as I'm pulling into the parking spot, 7 miles away, probably on the other side of town, there's a glass window that I'm pointing to. And I realize, holy shit, I don't have a single fucking light on the exterior of the car other than these two LEDs down low. Mm-hmm. No corners, yeah. No taillights, no nothing. And I flick it over to the headlight setting. And the only thing that changes is a little green LED shows up.
On the dash cluster.
Rule number one of ergonomics. You don't expect someone to look for the absence of something.
Yeah.
You say, boom, headlights are off, dickweed.
Yeah.
But so you have the entire senior editorial staff of a car magazine fooled. No wonder these morons in Kias don't figure this shit out.
They're not actually morons.
They might be.
The people who design the cars are morons.
The people who design the car should be in jail. Mm-hmm. I think, growing up, my mom's best friend, who is still one of my favorite people on planet Earth, she made a left-hand turn and a car was coming towards her with no headlights on. And our babysitter had just been in the passenger seat. She had just dropped her off. If the babysitter was in the passenger seat, she would have been dead. And my mom's best friend barely made it. I'm life-changing, life-altering, you know, hospitalization for a long period of time, huge crash. And so that was my sort of like, I remember being like 10 and being like, why would they have no headlights on? And I think the woman was drunk, clearly not a smoker.
Nighttime.
It was at night. Yeah. Clearly not a smoker, or she would have, you know, had to turn the lights on, but bad shit.
Yeah.
And so I'm super sensitive. I see somebody on the road with no lights on and I aim towards them flashing you can't do that anymore because it's my estimation that between 3-5% of the cars on the road right now do not have lights on at night.
Yeah.
And that's just based on current experience. I've once in my entire life seen that happen on a Mercedes-Benz. Mm. I have once or maybe twice seen it on a Volkswagen. Never, doesn't happen on German cars. It's always Japanese and Korean cars.
And that's just a design problem.
It's a design problem. It's the Germans saying, even if the law doesn't require that, there's no way we're going to allow
that. So how exactly is the Canadian law structure? Do you know?
They all have to have auto headlights. So it was as of 21, right? I think it was December 21. All cars sold in Canada had to have automatic headlights, had to be equipped with automatic headlights. And if they were overrided and turned off, the dash could not be illuminated, period. Mm. It just makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Well, Canada also had mandatory DRLs like in the 90s.
It was either late 80s or early 90s. And
well, yeah, as far back as the 90s possibly.
By the way, required retrofit. It wasn't this like, oh, you have a car from 1985. You don't have to worry about it. It was go and have them wired in.
Wow. So if you're driving around in like a E-Type,
you must have
DRLs.
I mean, I know all my friends with 80s Volkswagens, like Mark II Sciroccos and Mark II Jettas, all had
retrofits.
And it was, you just put a wire on the relay. So as soon as the car got power, the lights were on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, Canada is thinking, where the fuck? So the same regulators that are stopping us from getting good lighting, that are allowing these blinding fucking lights and allowing these engineers to just blatantly circumvent all this stuff, are also allowing cars to be driven around with no lights. It's that triple whammy that turns this into like lighting gate for me. Like this upsets me to know how many people died last year. Like I'm scared to death to drive around at night.
Before we even get amber turn signal mandate also. Same thing.
I mean, it makes me so happy when I see a car with amber turn signals these days, and that really shouldn't be that difficult. It is.
Yeah. I mean, I know that Tesla has made it a way that you differentiate between high trim or did they went standard amber recently. They went standard amber.
Yeah. They switched to amber because it's one light for worldwide. I mean, it should be one.
Yeah.
One worldwide.
There was some car recently maybe that I was learning about. It wasn't a Tesla. Maybe it was a Ford or something like that.
It was high trim.
Where the high trim models had amber turn signals and the low trim models had red ones.
So I talked to a BMW product planner years ago about this. It was just someone that I knew happened to know. And I said, listen, you guys are doing red turn signals. How much does that actually cost you? Because it's not just, so your choices are, you can have one bulb that does both brake and turn signal, or the tail brake and turn signal.
I've only ever seen American companies do that, because you wouldn't be able to sell a car like that in Europe.
Audis did it?
Really?
Yes.
Recently?
Oh, not really. Hold on. They're not, I don't think in the last 10 or 15 years. But 80s for sure. So you can have one bulb that's sort of dimmed.
Dual filament.
Dual filament. The dim filament is on for taillights. Mm-hmm. And then the bright, so the it's 7 and 21 watts or 5 and 21. So the 5 is a taillight. And then 21 is either turn signal or brake. Mm-hmm. And that gets really confusing, for example.
Especially if you can only see half the car.
Right. So that's why CHMSL helps so much, right? The third brake light. So that your choice as a manufacturer, you can still do that. I think the van is actually that way. It's pretty fucking sad. My e-Golf flashes its brake light as a turn signal, which is kind of disgusting, like that they're doing this. And then you can have, so you can have a separate red turn signal, which some cars do. And then you can have an amber turn signal, which is obviously-
Which is mandated in Europe.
Right. And most of the rest of the world.
As it should be.
And I said, what could it possibly be? $12 per car?
No, it's like 12 cents, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's a scale, right? Yes, so using one bulb is obviously the cheapest. And LEDs are all make everything a little bit more expensive. But the most expensive thing you can do is have an all red tail with yellow or amber illumination coming through it.
Right.
So that's because you have to have another layer of lens and whatever. But that to a single one is still under $1 per car. And so I have a real problem.
The funny thing is that if you try to retrofit your car to European, have ambers, and it's like $1,000 worth of lights that you have to buy OEM from somewhere.
Well, and then you got to code it on all modern cars because they're looking for, you know, they're not looking for the lights. They don't know what to flick. I mean, I changed the lighting on my first e-Golf, which was halogen rears. And it only used on each side, it had two dual filaments, so a 521. And it would only use one for brakes and not the other one. And I'm like, what? Stop. So I was able to go in and code it so that when I put on the brakes, all lights were on 21 watts, like absolute 100% output. Sorry, they weren't dual filament. It was done electronically. So it was pulse width modulated. But they were both full brightness. And then I changed it so instead of going full brightness, half brightness for turn signal, I went on, off, on, off. Mm-hmm. And then I added that European slam on the brakes quickly and you get a flash, dick, 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 dick for the brakes. You know, all this stuff that is not allowed by US law, but it's clearly helpful. Mm-hmm. Like you get the car in front of you, slam on the brakes. In Europe, when you see that fast, pop, 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 it gets your attention.
Yeah, it's like putting on your hazards.
Yeah, illegal in the US. So now we're dependent on the person who has no driver training, because America requires no driver training.
Yes.
To, in the middle of a panic stop, go and look for their emergency flashers.
I do it,
but I don't think most people do it.
No, no.
And I'm doing it to protect myself. I don't want to get rear-ended.
Yes, that's right.
I hereby call for the beginning of Lightingate, and I want everyone involved in both sides of this, on the government who's not paying attention and killing people, and on the automakers who are laughing in my face saying, yeah, we are cheating. One of them, whom was obviously German, I just doubted, saying, you know what? You guys should get the same shit treatment that everyone got for Dieselgate, because you're actually killing people here. And I think my guess is more people have died because of shit U.S. lighting regulations and shit U.S. lighting regulation enforcement than diesel.
You know what absolutely baffled me also around this amber topic is that even in the old days, you know, where you would have just the outer lens be the thing you changed, you know, if you go to like a Miras like this, old 911s are like this, E-types are like this, Mercedes are like this, like a 280 SL, for example, is like this. US was all red up until 70, I think, for the US, and then they would have a separate lens that would be orange at the corners for the Euro cars. Like, why did they have them actually specifically set out to make red turn signals? So was there was previously a US regulation that required turn signals to be red in like the 60s?
I don't think so.
Because E-types are like this.
So they were...
The entire rear cluster was red on all these cars. Think about a Mercedes, a 67 250 SE or a Jaguar E-type. You know,
I mean, the only ones I know is the wraparound red reflector that you get after the amber turns into the 70 stuff.
Yes.
So all the 60 stuff was all 100% red. The
entire cluster was red, and including the turn signals. Turn signals had to be red. I think that used to be the case
must have
in the
been.
United States.
it must have been. I'm trying to think of if I know of any 60s car. Beatles. No, hold on. They were also all red.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, I wonder if our lighting regs.
I bet there was an old U.S. regulation that required them to be red in the old days, up until about 1970.
I mean, a 72 Beetle has amber turn signals.
When they switch
to the circle. But a 69 and 70 don't.
Yeah, the one that looks like the bottom of an iron. Flat on the bottom and then kind of church-shaped. You know, when they switch to the fully round one. I think it looks like the bottom of an iron because it's flat on the bottom. And then
looks like a Bugatti grill.
Sure, whatever.
Okay.
Anyway, that was an aside. Anyway, I took the wind out of your sort of declaration of negligence on the part of automakers and regulators.
I wrote that column almost 10 years ago, and it's really nice to finally see mainstream media, like Wall Street Journal, picking this shit up. Like, hey, this is not you. You're not out of your mind. But come on. I mean, we live in the Bay Area. Every other car is a fucking Tesla. Jesus Christ. I mean, it used to be, we all knew Ford headlights were the most blinding, like a Ford truck. You could tell from 3 miles away, but you knew it was this like vaguely blinding tall thing. Yeah,
and like indiscriminate.
Right. But you could, you know, you knew not to flash them because, oh, it's just a Ford truck. Right. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, you genuinely can't tell whether low beam or high beam.
Yes.
Teslas are some of the worst offenders at the moment, I think.
We didn't even talk about people all driving around with their high beams on.
What is it? It's
they're
Civics.
They're always Hondas. It's, yes.
Why is this a thing?
I don't know.
What the fuck is wrong? Okay, so here's the thing. I haven't driven, I mean, I've driven all of them, but I haven't driven enough recent, like 2002 to 2015 Honda Civics recently to figure out why the fuck they always
have their high beams on.
Is it that their low beams suck? No, because everything else would be. It's just got to be a missing, it's got to be like the placement of the high beam indicator is so bad. No, they had the double layer dash. Somebody in the comments, please. Okay, first things first. Send this video to everyone you know who's pissed off about this stuff, because we need to start people paying attention to the fact that like this is genuinely dangerous shit. Like I'm all for sliding a car around 100 miles an hour, but don't be driving around at night with no lights on. Oh, we were on that Icon shoot last week and I'm in a Kia. You know what a psycho I am about lighting. You all know this now, clearly. The phone rings and I'm not one to answer the phone while I'm while I'm driving. And I have my Vangina is in front of me. I'm in a rented Kia Soul. And so I hit like speakerphone on my car and it was Randy Popst calling through. Randy was driving the Vangina through one of the other guys and is like, Randy has hereby requested you turn some lights on. And I look over and I'm like, I know, I was embarrassed, right? Don't tell Randy.
Especially but, Randy Popst of all people to call you out.
Yelling at me. But I'm like, I look over and I'm like, it's on auto. And he's like, there's no lights on. I'm like, that can't be. It's dusk. It wasn't dark yet, but I certainly would
usually
have,
it's you calling us to tell us to turn our lights on during always, a shoot.
Old cars always lights on immediately. First, that's for film. But even driving my old cars on roads like this, people now expect a car that is going to move will have lights on the front of it. Mm-hmm. And so what I've noticed is that I cut people off often who don't have daytime running lights on, like at a four-way stop. I'm like, la, la, la. If I'm not paying attention, I'll start to go. And then I get them beeping at me because I'm
going out of turn.
But I'm like, oh, I thought you were parked. You had no lights on. Right. Yeah. So what I realize is that the expectation is people are looking for frontal lighting. But so embarrassing. This fucking Kia not only didn't turn its lights on when it was 20 minutes past where I would have sunset. Said mandatory lights on, but had no DRLs. And I'm like, somebody must have gone and turned them off. Couldn't find it. There was no option anywhere. And I would love to know how all of a sudden Kia cannot have fucking DRLs. They're required by law. I'm fine.
It's a rental car. Somebody probably crashed it and tore the front of the bumper off or something like that. And it was, I mean,
they have to just be low. I mean, they were halogens. I don't know. I was mortified that there I was on my high horse in my Kia rental, Soul. Which by the way, was still pulling at 122 miles an hour at the end of that runway. Mm. It was not slow. Mm-hmm. High horse.
Well, it's only 7,000 foot long runway.
I didn't start exactly at the end. Yeah. And we barely had enough room to stop. It might've hit 125. Point though is even those of us who are psychotic about the light situation, that was the second time that I've been really.
Yeah. Which
out.
Indicates to you that it's a design flaw.
Yeah. 100% design flaw, which tells me that it's something the government needs to step in and fix.
As in Canada.
God damn. Do we have to move to Canada? We all said
neither
that.
Neither of us is saying anything about the election. Okay.
The what?
The election.
Who?
Yes. Okay, great. We didn't talk about it. Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Curmudgeon Show. This has been a presentation by the Haggerty Podcast Network.
Share this episode with everyone who's pissed off about the lights.
Especially if they happen to work for Nahitza.
Yeah. I want a call. I want a statement. I want those fuckers to tell us why they're letting people die on our roads.
Can't afford to study it. That's the official line,
right? Cheat on someone else's fucking homework. Did they not go to high school? If you couldn't afford or couldn't be bothered, look, you couldn't afford, you had to go to work or whatever, you fucking copied your friend's homework. Mm-hmm. It's natural. It's normal.
Now go take a look at what they're doing in Europe.
Exactly. Go copy off their fucking homework.
Great.
Bye. Yeah. I'm going to go punch a headlight or something.
No, unpunch. Opposite. Headlights for all. I don't know.
Oh. No, I mean like a Honda Civic. Oh. I'm just going to go find the next person with a Civic with a goddamn high beam on. Somebody please tell me why these headlights. That's the other
thing. I've yelled at people driving before. Turn off your fucking high beams.
I scream at them all. I pull up right next to them. And they look over. I'm like, turn off your fucking high beams. And they look at me like I'm crazy. Or you have not a single light on the outside of your car. Are you fucking trying to kill everyone? And they're like, what? It's on. No, they're not. Oh, I hate everyone. I'm leaving. I can't even with this fucking planet anymore. I can't do it.
Bye.